good evening. And all that stuff. I keep thinking it's Friday because I'm going to be off tomorrow and all next week. KPHX Phoenix Jeff Farias will fill in tomorrow and the following Friday night. And Monday through Thursday next week, comedian and motivational speaker, that's what it says here, Aaron Friedman will be guest hosting. It ought to be a lot of fun. So tomorrow night and next Friday night, Jeff Farias of KPHX, the flagship station of this network. And Monday through Thursday, Aaron Friedman. So tune in. And, you know, I know that Jeff is a lot more patient than I am, so I don't know about Alan Friedman or Aaron Friedman, but maybe some of you right-wingers can weasel your way onto the program with me going. What a weird day. It started weird. First morning in a long time, I haven't laid in bed at 8 o'clock and watched Don Imus. He is, that program is so pointless, it really is, you know, four guys sitting around with all their BS. But he has, you know, the people who call in are always entertaining. This morning it was Mary Madeline who called in, and I have to give Imus credit, I guess. He just sat there and let her ramble on about her lies and deceptions regarding her former boss, Dick Cheney, and her former boss's butt boy, who's now on trials, Irving Lewis Libby. But Imus just let her go on after she left the program. He made a couple of comments to some of the guys on his team, and she got pissed off and called back in on the, you know, regular call-in line, not the guest line, but the regular call-in line. She just called back in, and and according to Imus, he saw her name on the screen, and he punched her up, and she was just bitching him out. Ben Birch sent us the audio. We were going to play it, but I listened to it right before the program. I listened to about, what was it, Kathy Christ? It went on for about 15 minutes, didn't it? And it's really not worth listening to. You can get it at the Atreos blog. I'm sure you can probably get it at YouTube if you want to, you know, if you want to get it. You know, every marriage has its inner mechanisms that keep the marriage together for as long as they're going to be together. You know, I guess the hope is when you marry somebody that it's for a long, 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 long time. If you're extremely lucky, it'll be until one or both of you die. And I'm talking about marriage in the sense of partnerships. I don't care if it's man, woman, 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 man, man. I'm talking about marriage, you know, marriage of souls. And I thought about this when I was listening to the audio of Mary Madeline on Imus's program. How, you know, her marriage must have to James Carville must have some kind of lubricant to keep the wheels turning. Oh, don't take your mind there. Some kind of lubricant to keep the wheels turning inside that marriage, because she's a world class liar, just unbelievable, and she has worked for years for this murderous thug, Dick Cheney. It's not the money. I guess she's ideologically driven to do what she does to further this neo-Nazi agenda. And Carville, on the other hand, I met Carville, oh, God, back in the 70s, the second when Jimmy Carter ran for re-election. Carville and Paul Begala and we're here in Georgia, and there were dozens, scores of us. We were called the Peanut Brigade, working on the re-election of Jimmy Carter. And Carville also worked to get Zell Miller elected, back when Zell Miller was sane and still a Democrat. And I'm not going to sit here and say I know James Carville, a drinking buddy, but I do know. I mean, I've had conversations with him, and I've watched him on CNN and yada, yada, yada. Had a lot of respect for him. I mean, he usually cuts through the bull squat and gets right to the issue. Don't take any guff from any Republicans. And then I think, well, how in the hell does this marriage work? And that's always been intriguing to me, just how. And there's no such thing as, well, there's certain things you don't discuss. You know, Kathy and I work together, and we've tried that. Well, you know, we're going to leave the marriage outside the studio. Doesn't work that way. And we're just, you know, I mean, we're not in direct conflict. We agree on most of the issues that come up in our marriage, that political issues or issues for discussion that don't center around, you know, how we're living our lives together, or how we're raising our child together. But Madeline and Carville, I don't know how they do that. There must be something there that is just powerful as hell, or blind between the two of them. Because Madeline will come right out and tell you that you know, liberals are one step below pond scum. And either she's married to one, or Carville's whole shtick is a shtick, which I don't think it is. All that to just to say, no, we're not going to play the audio. It's out there if you want to hear it. But it was just sad, pathetic to listen to Madeline, Mary Madeline, just lying through her teeth. I mean, she's worse than Babe Buchanan. Much worse, 1,000 times worse than Babe Buchanan. I honestly don't know how some of these apologists and enablers for this criminal administration, how do they live with themselves? How do they do it? How do they do it? Man. Our North Metro Atlanta correspondent, Sharon, sent me an email right before the program. She says, shouldn't Cheney at least lose his security clearance as a result of what we're learning in the Libby trial? He obviously can't be trusted with top secret information. Yeah, of course, you know, I think we all can agree with that, that Cheney should lose more than his security clearance. Don't you think? A woman well known around the world died today, and she died younger age than she should have died. And it wasn't on the news. Actually, she died yesterday. It wasn't on the news today. Her name was Angela King. She was from Jamaica. She's a former UN official for women's equality. Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, said she will be mourned with profound affection and respect around the world. I will bet you that there's not one in a million Americans who know who this is, Angela King. That means there's probably less than 300 citizens of the United States who know who Angela King was. But anyway, she was 68. She, I believe she died of cancer. She was appointed by former Secretary General Kofi Annan in 1997 as an Assistant Secretary General for Gender Issues and the Advancement of Women. And she died yesterday in a New York hospital. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said, quote, she was a fervent champion of the equality of women and men and women's enjoyment of their human rights. She knew that all parts of the UN had a responsibility to uphold these principles, including in the area of peace and security, end quote. Now, her work helped pave the way for a landmark UN Security Council resolution about 7 years ago that recognized women's essential role in peace negotiations and the setting up of a post-conflict society, no matter where it is, Bosnia, Middle East, occupied territories in Israel, Iraq, you know, it doesn't make any difference, Afghanistan. Among her many assignments, she served as head of the UN Observer Mission in South Africa from 1992 to 1994. That was during the time of that country's first democratic non-racial elections, making her one of the few women in the world, in that world body, to head such an important operation. She is survived by a son, Angela King of Jamaica, 68, died yesterday of cancer.
Just another minor chord in a worn out
21 past the hour. The phone number here for reference a little bit later on in the program is 800-989-1480. This was at rawstory.com. Several Republican lawmakers have sharply criticized the imprisonment of two border agents who were convicted of shooting a Mexican drug smuggler in the back and attempting to cover it up. I'm sure you've seen that story. The two men, Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compion, were sentenced to prison because a jury found them guilty. They were convicted of shooting this guy in the back and then tried to cover it up. All right, he's a drug smuggler, so he obviously is subhuman or something, I guess. Republicans are appealing to Bush to pardon these two. And those appeals now are starting to increase in intensity since one of these guys was assaulted by fellow inmates in a federal prison last weekend. Now, I'm not trying to be cold here, but that is not a story. Someone gets assaulted in a federal prison? Oh, please. Oh, come on. You know, the prison industrial complex in this country doesn't give a goddamn of what happens to anybody. Forget about it. Give us some money. We'll lock them up. There's no longer, for the most part, any focus on rehabilitation. Just lock them up. They get assaulted? Yeah, they get assaulted. So all of a sudden, a couple of Republicans here are getting their bloomers in a wad or their depends in a wad because one of these two border agents, convicted of murder, has been assaulted. Now, that's not the story. Here's the story. Yesterday, two Republican congressmen had strong words to say about Bush's inaction on this, and one even threatened impeachment. Can you believe this? Representatives Walter Jones, Republican of North Carolina, and Dana Rohrabacher, Republican of California, that pig again, this is according to McClatchy newspapers, blasted President Bush for not intervening in the case, with Rohrabacher hinting that he would consider pressing for impeachment if either one of the two agents was killed in prison. Rohrabacher said, "Now, I tell you, Mr. President, if these men, especially after this assault, are murdered in prison, or if one of them lose their lives," I guess there's a difference there, "there's going to be some kind of impeachment talk in Capitol Hill," end quote. The newspapers quoted Representative Walter Jones as saying, quote, "The president has lost my respect because he will not step forward and do what's right," end quote. Now, according to the writer, Dave Montgomery, who writes for McClatchy Newspapers, this case has become a cause celeb among conservative groups which contend that Ramos and Compion were railroaded by overzealous federal prosecutors who gave the drug smuggler immunity to testify against the two agents. Didn't kill him, excuse me. They just shot him, then tried to cover it up. Rohrabacher said, quote, "The president of the United States talks a lot about his Christian charity and his religious beliefs. He now is showing a mean-spirited side to him and arrogance in which he will turn his back," end quote. Can you believe this filthy half-wit Rohrabacher makes a statement like that about a case that was tried? If Rohrabacher doesn't like it, maybe he should notify the defense attorneys for these guys and file an appeal. That's how it works in this country, Rohrabacher, you half-witted jackass. Plus, you're talking about Bush and Christian charity in the same sentence? A man who is directly responsible for the deaths of close to a million people in the Middle East? You jerk-ass. You half-witted freak, Rohrabacher. What the? Man! So they're threatening impeachment if Bush doesn't what? Pardon them? God. And I guess you've heard the update on, let's call it, Air Pelosi. Right? You know, the Republicans, led by the pig in Palm Beach, Florida, Rush Limbaugh, on his filthy, air-polluting radio program. The pig has led all the mouth-breathing Republicans for the past several days in this assault on Nancy Pelosi because she asked for an airplane that would fly her nonstop from D.C. to her home district in San Francisco, in keeping with the rules laid down by the Department of Homeland Security post 9/11, not Department of Homeland Security, the federal government post 9/11, to protect the third person in line to be president of the United States. These filthy Republicans, I'll tell you, there's a bunch of them who really I'd like to strangle. I'll just come out and say it. I really would like to strangle them. That's the way the story's been reported. When we come back after the break, I'll tell you what the truth is. The story's been reported about Pelosi demanding this luxurious aircraft. Remember the $200 haircut that Clinton got sitting on the tarmac at LA Express? Turned out to be nothing but a filthy, pig-led lie. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Fly and enjoy America's great destination spots. Get down to Disney World in Florida.
Yeah. Okay, if you go to the Republican National Committee's website, you'll see something there called Pelosi's Power Trip and Nonstop Nancy Seeks Flight of Fancy. And it just goes on and on. It says, Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants nonstop military aircraft for herself, staff, family, and other members in California delegation. From the Washington Times, the office of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is pressing the Bush administration for routine access to military aircraft for domestic flights, such as trips back to her San Francisco district, according to sources familiar with the discussions. Also in the Washington Times, the sources, who include those in Congress and in the administration, said the Democrat is seeking regular military flights not only for herself and her staff, but also for relatives and other members of the California delegation. And the same writer, a pig named Rowan Scarborough, writing for the Mooney-owned Washington Times, also said a knowledgeable source called the request carte blanche for an aircraft anytime. Britt Hume on Fox News says, Pelosi is said by military sources to be interested in more, a larger plane capable of carrying more people nonstop to the West Coast. Jim Koonin, Associated Press, quotes, Pelosi is saying, we want an aircraft that can reach California. The Washington Times, again, Pelosi plane includes private bed, entertainment center, and costs $22,000 per hour to operate. The craft she has reportedly requested. The Air Force's C-32 seats an entourage of 42 business class with a stateroom, entertainment center, private bed, and fully operational communication center. Niles Latham in the New York Post, writing under the headline, Arrow Air, Ogant. Nancy, arrogant, writes, it costs taxpayers $22,000 an hour to operate, according to military and congressional sources. Washington Times again. Pelosi request goes beyond what prior speakers requested. Sources said Ms. Pelosi's request goes beyond what Mr. Hastert received. That's that pig Rowan Scarborough again. Editorial in the Washington Times today. For comparison, the jet Mr. Hastert settled for is much smaller. It seats 16. From CNN's The Situation Room yesterday. And the plane Representative Hastert used could fly coast to coast nonstop. Critics wondered why Pelosi couldn't use the planes her predecessor, Republican Dennis Hastert, had used, the smaller C-37A or C-20. Both planes are capable of flying coast to coast without refueling under optimal conditions. Edward Epstein, writing in the San Francisco Chronicle, under the headline, GOP makes much ado about the size of Pelosi's plane, Epstein writes, Representative John Murtha hints of cuts in Pentagon funding over plane flap. Murtha said he's convinced the Pentagon has been leaking information about the possibility that Pelosi would use large military planes to make her look bad. Murtha went on to say, quoted in the San Francisco Chronicle, Murtha said, quote, they're making a mistake when they leak it because she decides on allocations for them. And then MSNBC's Tucker Carlson said Murtha's action was skirting the edge of appropriate. Tucker Carlson said, quote, apparently Jack Murtha, the guy who's in control of the military budget, called over the White House and said Nancy Pelosi wants a bigger plane. Now, it seems to me that's skirting the edge of appropriate, having the guy in charge of the military budget demand a military aircraft for one of his closest political allies. Don't they have anything better to do? That was yesterday. Now, every single word I just shared with you is a filthy lie, except what Ed Epstein wrote in the Chronicle. That's true. Everything else, an absolute filthy Republican, Rush Limbaugh, Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity lie. You want the truth? Statement released today from House Sergeant of Arms Bill Livengood. For immediate release, February 8th, 2007. Is today the 8th? Today's the 8th, right? Thursday the 8th. For immediate release, as the Sergeant-at-Arms, I have the responsibility to ensure the security of the members of the House of Representatives, to include the Speaker of the House. The Speaker requires additional precautions due to her responsibilities as the leader of the House and her constitutional position as second in line of succession to the presidency. In a post-9/11 threat environment, it is reasonable and prudent to provide military aircraft to the Speaker for official travel between Washington and her district. The practice began with Speaker Hastert, and I have recommended that it continue with Speaker Pelosi. The fact that Speaker Pelosi lives in California compelled me to request an aircraft that is capable of making nonstop flights for security purposes, unless such an aircraft is unavailable. This will ensure communications capabilities and also enhance security. I made the recommendation to use military aircraft based upon the need to provide necessary levels of security for ranking national leaders such as the Speaker. I regret that an issue that is exclusively considered and decided in a security context has evolved into a political issue. What? You mean these filthy, degenerate, pig-ass Republicans have been lying? No. You mean it wasn't Pelosi? It was the House Sergeant-at-Arms who made the request? No. Couldn't be. This guy must be being paid off. That's it. Al Gore slipped him $1 million. No. Nancy Pelosi's fan. No. Let's see. Barbara Boxer's old man gave. No. Let me see. Somewhere there's got to be a flaw here. It wasn't the Sergeant of Arms. Rush Limbaugh said it was Pelosi. Republican National Committee says it's Pelosi. The pigs that write at the Washington Times say it's Pelosi. Tucker Carlson said it's Pelosi. Niles Latham at the New York Post said it's Pelosi. Well, son of a bitch, somebody's lying. I wonder who it could be. Strangle. Strangle has such a nice, sharp-edged sound to it, doesn't it? As in, I'd like to strangle these sons of bitches. Strangle. Now, I'm sure the Republican National Committee Piglet website is going to publish a retraction. I'm sure the punk ass at the Post is going to publish a retraction. I'm sure the Washington Times Rowan Scarborough, republished retraction. I'm sure the Washington Times editorial republished retraction. I'm sure all these pigs will publish retractions, won't they? Tucker Carlson, you're going to come out tomorrow, aren't you, right? You'll go on Imus's program and say, well, I'm a twit, and I really twitted out on this one. Gee, I'm sorry. Right? Strangle.
Stop, Malloy, stop. Let me breathe.
God. Air Pelosi. Okay. The Republicans are at it again. Bush leading the pack of wolves and murderers. They want to cut NPR and PBS, cut the budget again, slash the funding for National Public Radio and public broadcast system. What would we do without Sesame Street, Kathy? Dear MoveOn member, George W. Bush is trying yet again to slash funding for NPR and PBS. This week, Bush proposed a new budget with devastating cuts to public broadcasting. Sesame Street and other ad-free children's shows are under the knife. So is the independent journalism our country needs. Enough is enough. We fought this fight before and won, but we can't afford the risk anymore. With the new Congress, we can make sure this never happens again. We need Congress to insulate NPR and PBS from the political winds. And if you go to MoveOn.org, there is a petition you can sign, and it will be delivered to the appropriate Democrats, who, being the brave, fearless party that they are, will immediately get to work on legislation that I'm sure Noah and Marika and Eli and Adam G. and the whole MoveOn org civic action team will help them write. You know, kind of the way the energy industry writes our energy policy behind closed doors. I'm sure Eli and the rest of them at MoveOn will probably invite the public in for this this effort. But go to MoveOn.org if you care about public broadcasting or national public radio. I do. I certainly do. Oh, I know. They're not what they used to be, but what is? Right?
Strangle. Strangle. I'm going to strangle them.
Democrat approach comes down to this. The terrorists win and America loses.
I'm not comfortable playing music on this program by a board member of the National Rifle Association, a draft dodger, and a punk. It's a good song, though.
Hey, Teddy boy, you coward! The plane!
Oh, God. Eleanor writes about DePlaine. They just want to piss her off so thoroughly that she declares she will simply take regular commercial flights, which I understand she's done. That way, when it gets shot out of the sky and 190 other people die too, it looks less suspicious than a Wellstone or a Carnahan. God, how do you people get so paranoid? The Iranians have issued a very clear warning here. It is simply this. This comes from Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He said today, if the United States were to attack Iran, the country will respond by striking U.S. interests all over the world. Which seems relatively reasonable to me. Unprovoked attack on America by the Saudis. I would be inclined to strangle any Saudi that I've met anywhere on Earth. Oh, that's right. The Saudis, it was just 15 of the 19 bombers, came from Saudi Arabia. Okay, never mind. Speaking to a gathering of Iranian Air Force commanders, Ayatollah Khamenei said, quote, the enemy knows well that any invasion would be followed by a comprehensive reaction to the invaders and their interests all over the world, end quote. Khamenei said in remarks broadcast on state television, went on to say, quote, some people say that the United States president is not prone to calculating the consequences of his actions, but it is possible to bring this kind of person to wisdom. Oh, my God. No, it isn't, Your Honor, or whatever the hell you call an Ayatollah. What do you call him? Father? I have no idea. Rabbi? What do you call an Ayatollah? Ayatollah? Is that the word? Is that the honorific, like calling a judge Your Honor or a priest Father or
Ayatollah tomorrow.
I forgot. Right before the program, we got a bulletin. Let me read it here. It comes from the National Evangelical Association. Here it is. Ted Haggard is still a heterosexual. All right. Way to go, Ted. What is this, day 11-D or something? I mean, how long has he been heterosexual now? Huh? Do you know?
Is he still on meth?
It doesn't say if he's still using methane. Oh, it's not methane? I thought, well, never mind what I thought. You know, he and Limbaugh ought to get together. One's on methamphetamines, the other one is on OxyContins. One is constantly down, the other one's constantly up.
So to speak.
Well, I was going to add, so to speak, Kathy. I'm up, you're down. Reminds me of a poem as we are coming into the break here. This is an old poem. And there's something about Ted Haggard and Rush Limbaugh that made this poem pop into mind. Heathcliff was on the moor last night, in his eyes a look of wild joy. Tonight, the moor is on Heathcliff. It's his turn to be the boy.
Well, will you sing that mule train song again now?
Strangle. I swear to God, strangle. That's a good. I heard that on Garrison Keillor's Poets Corner. I don't know where it plays around the country, but here in Atlanta on NPR, it's every morning at 5:05 in the morning. Our local classic music disc jockey Lois Reitzes. She has the Garrison Keillor thing, and I'm sure I heard that poem on Garrison Keillor. You know how he does the Writer's Almanac with little tidbits for writers and readers, and then he talks about he puts a little poem in, and I think that poem about Heathcliff came from I may be wrong. All right, we are coming up at a break here. When we come back, just a couple more items, and then it's your program tonight. Again, I will be gone tomorrow and all next week. Jeff Farias of KPHX in Phoenix, our flagship station, will host this program tomorrow night and next Friday. And Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week, Aaron Friedman will be the guest host. So tune in and have fun with... with the two guys who, limited fun, but fun nonetheless, with the two guys who are going to substitute for us. Any other business notes we have? I want to do a program like Don Imus. They just sit there and drink coffee and do sports and do news and sit around and talk. Wow.
Heathcliff was on the moor last night, in his eyes a look of wild joy. Tonight the moor is on Heathcliff. It's his turn to be the boy. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovAm Radio.
It's 7 past the hour. Excuse me. The World Press certainly has more integrity than the American press in any form you want to select. Television, newspaper, news reporting, columnists, editorials. Let me share with you just one, and then it's on to your phone calls. This is in the Jerusalem Post yesterday, I believe. Yesterday's Jerusalem Post. Larry Durfner is the writer. He writes, "What's going on in Washington right now is unbelievable. Bush is getting away with it. He's escalating the war in Iraq. He's sending 21,500 more soldiers over there. Nobody's stopping him. Nobody's going to either. Not the Democrats, not the new Republican realists, and not American public opinion, where Bush is heading down to Nixon's Watergate level. The war in Iraq is a four-year runaway disaster. The American voters turned adamantly against it in the November elections. The vaunted James Baker-led panel recommended what most everybody wants, a careful withdrawal, or as careful a withdrawal as possible in the face of all that. It was just assumed Bush would have to bow to reality. No way. The exact opposite is happening. Not only is Bush not starting to get the troops out, he's not content to stand pat with the troops he's got there now. No, he's sending over more. The war in Iraq is one of the worst blunders in American history, and the man responsible is now digging America in deeper, and America is letting him do it. You watch these clowns in Congress, these eunuchs, who don't have the blanks to even pass what a Bush ally laughed off as a confetti resolution, a symbolic statement that wouldn't force Bush to withdraw, but would at least officially express Congress's opinion in favor of withdrawal. But they can't even agree on that. They're afraid the White House will accuse them of demoralizing the troops, of encouraging the enemy. It would be too politically risky. Such a statement wouldn't have stopped Bush anyway. The only way Congress can prevent Bush from escalating the war is by refusing to pay the cost of sending the extra troops in, but only a few senators and congressmen are willing to take that step, because then the White House would accuse Congress of leaving the troops to die, of taking away their guns and uniforms and everything. It's bull blank, of course. The only thing that would be taken away is Bush's right to send over those 21,500 more soldiers, but it's not going to happen. The fear of White House propaganda has all but a few politicians paralyzed, and the White House knows it. The administration isn't even worried. Dick Cheney told CNN about Bush's decision to escalate, quote, "We're moving forward." Congress has control over the purse strings. They have the right, obviously, if they want to cut off funding. But in terms of this effort, the president has made his decision, end quote. In America, the dogs bark, but the caravan moves on. Right over the cliff. Meanwhile, the administration's argument for moving forward has cleverly changed. Bush and his mouthpieces have stopped braying about victory because nobody will buy that anymore. It'll only hold them up to ridicule. No, America isn't fighting to win in Iraq now, because whatever victory might look like, it's nowhere on the horizon. Instead, America is fighting to avoid defeat, which is very easy to visualize. Defeat will come when America leaves Iraq, with the country still exploding, with the killing still going on in all directions, with America still hated by everyone, except maybe the Kurds, and with nothing but further atomization, slaughter, and radicalism ahead. That's defeat. And that, warns the pro-war camp, will leave the entire Middle East in danger of being pulled into the Iraqi conflict. Even worse, it will leave America disgraced and its enemies emboldened. So, they argue, America has no choice but to fight on. The 21,500 plan is called a surge, a euphemism for escalation that lets people think that this is just temporary, that the extra troops being sent into Iraq will be home soon. The idea is that these new troops being deployed in new ways will make the difference in the war. They will bring a turning point towards security on the Iraqi streets and national unity in the Iraqi government. I'm not being too original when I say this is impossible. In the best case, the extra troops might make Baghdad somewhat less lethal. They might bring the daily nationwide body count down from 100 or so to 80 or 70. But security, they're not going to bring. And this is in the best case. Another possibility is that they will make no difference at all. Still another is that they will make things worse. But even if the new troops really make a dent in the murder rate, does anybody think that whatever security and stability gains might be made from the surge would remain in place after America's withdrawal? In other words, is there anything these additional soldiers can achieve that would change the consequences of an American pullout, that would make those consequences any different from what they would be if those 21,500 soldiers were kept home? Does anybody have a good idea for anything at all that the U.S. can do in Iraq over the next 2 years, or 5 years, or 10 years, that would make the downside of an American withdrawal any less steep than it would be after the gradual withdrawal beginning now that most Americans want? I haven't heard such an idea, and I don't believe it exists. While optimists may come up with feasible plans for improving Iraqi conditions under America's occupation, no one can come up with a feasible plan for holding Iraq together after American troops are gone. So by staving off the withdrawal, the Bush administration's escalation of the war is just delaying America's inevitable defeat. The only lasting difference the surge will make is to increase the number of American soldiers getting killed and maimed. The majority of senators and congressmen, Democrats and Republicans both, now understand this. And since they understand but lack the courage to use their power to force Bush to wind down this war, the American blood about to be spilled for nothing will be on their hands too. Larry Dierfner writing in the Jerusalem Post. Your phone calls. Let's start with Teresa, who's calling from Dallas. Teresa, welcome to the program. Oh, Teresa's all right. Teresa's not there. Let's go to Bruce in California. Bruce in California. Hey, Bruce.
Buenas noches, Miguel.
Back at you.
Hey, a couple things. You had asked me to call back. Called you about a week ago regarding an editorial in the newspaper. Some guy had written in talking about his views that we ought to bomb Iraq the way we did Japan.
Oh, yeah,
and, yeah. Yeah, it's real. And they did print my response, and there were actually four responses that were printed, and all four of them put the guy in his place.
Well, good.
So there's some hope.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing that alone was enough to put a smile on my face that, you know, that everybody that responded, nobody supported him, and everybody just slapped him down.
Now, where are you calling from in California?
I'm in Ventura County.
In
Santa Paula.
Okay, great.
And it's between midway between,
yes,
Los Angeles and Santa Barbara.
I spent a month there one night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. good for you.
Yeah.
Another thing is that I'm sort of a nerdy kind of a computer nerd kind of a guy.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this 363 tons of cash. And so I decided to plug in the numbers and do the dividing and
let's make sure everybody understands what you're talking about. That's the money that was sent via airplanes on pallets dumped in Iraq. What was
$100 bills.
Yeah, a 12 or 14 billion.
$12.4 billion.
Yeah, in cash. And Bremer says he didn't know what happened to it. Yes, Kathy.
I just, who came up with this genius plan? Is this some of the strategery that Bush put in place? Crates of $100 bills? I just can't get over this. It's like, what, were they all going to go to Hooters?
Right, yeah, well.
Anyway, I just wanted to tell you that I did a little more calculating on the weight factor, and I figured out that if we've got $500 billion invested in Iraq, we've got 14,700 tons of cash in it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That is, if it was all sent over, strapped down to a pallet.
Right. Yeah. It would be.
You hear the excuse these pigs Americans use? They said, "Well, Iraq is a cash economy. They really don't have a banking system. So, this was an appropriate way to do it. They don't have a banking system because we've blown them all up.
No.
Jesus. And frozen all the funds when Saddam Hussein was in power. This is crazy.
It is.
Crazy stuff. All right, listen.
Hey, before we bail, can you put me on hold? Let me talk to Kathy for a sec.
She can't pick up the phone. We're in Georgia.
Oh, okay.
You can email her.
All right, I'll do that.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bruce. Take care. Was this guy going to ask you out?
Maybe he knows where there's a pallet full of cash.
Full of cash. I'll take that.
Feeling left out by right-wing talk radio? You found a home with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, was it that long? No, maybe 2 years ago. I don't know. But when it became clear, really clear, where there was no longer any doubt that this country was truly not just drifting toward or into fascism, because we have been drifting toward or into fascism for probably the past 100 years. Or longer, but that finally fascism had a chance to succeed, to take hold in this country. And I don't care if you call it corporatism or totalitarianism or authoritarianism, whatever you want to call it, it's fascism. When it became apparent to even an uneducated radio talk show host like moi that we were definitely on the cusp and rapidly tilting into a fascist state, I kind of flippantly or offhandedly when I made the statement, well, given a choice of living under communism or fascism, I'll probably take fascism if those were the only two choices. You know, if a third choice wasn't revolution, you understand what I'm saying? If there was only those two choices, fascism or communism, I'd take fascism. Bush somehow has melded the two together. Communism, where it concerns the bureaucratic internal workings of this country, wherever we make contact with the federal government. And a lot of state governments are starting to use that communist model now that the Bush crime family has been so successful with it. And fascism, where it concerns our foreign policy. Now, anyone will tell you that that these isms do collapse, and they usually collapse in flames, and they usually collapse... what happened in 1989 to the Soviet Union, to the contrary, notwithstanding, it's still is a flaming ball of disaster when communism and fascism collapse, or crash, or burn. Now, I'm talking about totalitarian communism. I'm not talking about pure, unfettered communism, although I don't like that either, but at least that is a living, a livable condition under which one could certainly exist and possibly flourish if one could get rid of one's desire to own pretty shiny things, new things. Whereas the alphas used to say, was it the alphas or the betas that used to say, they all did? Oh, they all did. They all were programmed to say, I like new things, I deserve new things make me happy. Jesus.
I say that every year, right before Giftmas.
You're right, and it falls on deaf ears every year, too. Fascism probably is a little bit easier to live under if you can control your urge for, you know, for freedom, for liberty, as long as you can control that. And to most Americans, all Republicans, all conservatives, not a few Democrats, fascism or giving up control is an admirable state and one that this country is striving at breakneck speed toward producing. Is an overlord, a daddy, you know, dictator type, totalitarian, with what appear to be the trappings of democracy. This is what Hitler did. This is what Mussolini did. This is what Franco, well, not Franco, but in countries that have drifted either rapidly or slowly into fascism, the institutions of the democracy that it replaces are usually left in place. They become ineffective, ineffectual. They're no longer worth anything. They are shells of themselves. That's where we're going. So, having said all that, the question of the night is, do you think, I feel like Jack Cafferty over at CNN. The question that you can email me, MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. I even subscribe to this fascistic AOL. MikeDMalloy@AOL.com. Do you think that fascism, that you could live under fascism? Now, fascism will leave you alone as long as you're not a targeted minority. If you are a targeted minority, your ass is grass and the government is a huge lawnmower. And it's all over. But if you're not a targeted minority, and targeted minorities under fascism fluctuate, if you're fast on your feet, you can avoid it. The lawnmower. But fascism in the United States, it's here. It's queer. Get used to it. Sort of. You know what I'm saying to that. Yeah. I don't mean queer. Oh, never mind. We'll be right back.
Nation where the dictator treated himself to palaces with gold faucets, gold-covered AK-47s.
You can hear him almost get lustful when he says that, right? Where's Laura? In response to your question of the night, Nathan writes, you know, could you live? The question is, can you live under fascism? Mike, that really is a question, isn't it? I myself cannot live under fascism, which brings the inevitable next choice: should I fight for my country or move away? Yeah. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I don't want to live under fascism. I'm just saying that a tribe of some of the most brilliant people in the history of Western civilization, the Germans, when you consider their art, their science, their music. They managed to accept it, to live under it for a while until they were smashed. Mike, could I live under fascism? This is from Ward in Japan. The fact that I left the USA 2.5 years ago ought to tell you something. Japan is headed down that path again as well, but they have a longer way to go. From Tom, communism or fascism, Stalin or Hitler, or just simply Bushism, the real phenomenon is globalism. Corporate, predatory globalism. There is simply no choice. You try to live with it, but it gets worse and worse. Computer chips and driver licenses all the way to computer chips inside your body that will track you like an animal. Gruesome non-choice. The correct question you need to ask is, do you want Bush or do you want Bush? Okay. Oh, my God. One more here. Let's see. This is from Donald in Augusta. He writes, hell no, I'm a true blue liberal in the state of Georgia. How much more of an endangered species can you be? Except a gay true blue liberal in the state of Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Mississippi, etc. With this fascist government, that's about as low as it goes. It is bad enough with things the way they are. Now if the Bush crime family goes all the way, I might as well get the hell out of here. Trust me. With my being as vocal as I am about the Bush crime family, the fascist right, and my liberal views, I feel threatened enough as it is. Yeah. Okay, well, the question again is not, do you want to live under fascism? Nobody does. Nobody wants to live under any ism, I guess, unless it's freedomism. But we're there. I mean, we are so close, and we have a fifth column in this country of traitors, and that is the dominionist Christian right. It's not the Israeli lobby, please. You know, as nasty and crappy as the Israeli lobby can be, they're not a fifth column. They influence politicians way out of proportion to their importance, the lobbyists' importance. But the real fifth column in this country, the real organization that will devour this country and destroy it, rot it from the inside out, and assist in the ascension of fascism is the Christian dominionist right. Those are the people. People who are cowardly, fearful, terrified of their own shadows, cannot face their own non-existence, their deaths, believe in all sorts of spooks flying around in the sky who are going to grant their wishes if they just do good, they will get rich. Complete blasphemers of whatever teachings of Jesus still survive intact. They're scum, but they are the fifth column in this country that will bring this country down. Almost said to its knees. Bring this country down. That's the fifth column. That's the X in the equation that I don't think anybody can stop. What are you going to do? Invade churches and machine gun people? I don't think so. So what are you going to do? Try to reach out to these brain-dead suckers who handle snakes or raise their arms up as they stand shoulder to shoulder with 14,000 other people on a Sunday morning screaming and frothing at the mouth about some cloud being? How are you going to reach him? You tell me, truth seeker. Let me tell you, you're not. They're gone. So that's the basis of the question. Can you? Not do you want to. Can you? Yes, in the sense of the word C-A-N as your English teacher taught you to use it. Can you live under fascism? Back to your phone calls. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Well, I think you're going to get mad at me, but I'm going to have to do it anyway. I want to ask Kathy out. Kathy, I hope you'll come on down to Mississippi on Valentine's Day. And, hey, if you want to, bring Malloy to Mike, too.
Hey,
you and, Kathy, you and Molly and Mike, y'all come on down here on Valentine's Day.
I'd love to come down there and help you unload that truck.
Man, I tell you what, you wouldn't believe the people asking is Malloy coming? So, you know, and Molly, gosh, she's so cute. I'd love to meet that little old gal.
She is. She's got a bad cold right now and keeps infecting us. But, yeah, she's a sweetheart. But what you really called about?
Well, what I really called about was to thank everybody for their donations and to join the Founders Club. Let's support Nova M. Let's make this thing work, because like you, I've gotten to know these people, and these people mean business. They are our kind of folk, and I support them 100%, and I hope everybody will. They need it. They deserve it. They are good, solid American people, and they have my full endorsement, for whatever that's worth. And also, I wanted to announce that unreportednews.net has just added yet another writer, and it's one that just happened since last night.
Oh, yeah?
Remember Bob, who called in from Georgia?
You mean Joe?
Joe, I'm sorry, Joe.
Yes, yes.
Well, I talked to his wife before I called in tonight.
Really?
And they are going to have a column at Unreported News. I read the email they sent, and it was so well written, I was impressed, and I asked if they would be interested in having a column. And they were just thrilled to death, and so they're going to start doing a column for us. We're going to have a thing set up where if anybody wants to send them some donations to help them offset their medical expenses, they can do it through unreportednews.net.
Oh, that's great.
And so we're going to try and see if we can get them some help. But, hey, I tell you what, this lady can write. Bob? Is that the right name?
Joe.
Joe. I'm bad with names. But I'm going to post the article. I'm going to post it as an article tomorrow, what she wrote me. But
super.
It is really, really just a wonderful piece of writing, and I just hope everyone will go read it. Now, I think we got just a really wonderful writer coming aboard. But we have really, really got to pay attention in this country, because I've got an article right now that's up that talks about what's going on in Jackson County and what's in New Orleans. Bray, my New Orleans reporter, my Louisiana reporter, was in New Orleans.
You know, for the people who don't know exactly what you're talking about, Sarge, about these trucks that are coming, just give us a quick synopsis.
Sure.
It's a really good story.
Okay. There's Sean Ryan came up with the idea that how about having a list of 15 items that Jim Lancey of Jackson County Community Services Coalition needed. And let's have a drive and gather them and put them on some trucks and bring them down to the Jackson County, Mississippi. Well, I said, hey, that's a great idea, and let's get Head On Radio Network and Unreported News to join in November, and we'll see what we can do. Well, we have built 2 40-foot storage containers, and there's some people in Texas doing some work as well, and they're coming down on Valentine's Day bringing this stuff, and it's just going to do a lot of good for a lot of people.
Now, that's great. I'm assuming that a lot of this, most of it, all of it, have come from KPHX Phoenix listeners?
Yes, 3 trucks coming from Phoenix. 2 40-foot storage containers. Well, can you imagine? That's a lot of stuff. And Associated Appliance Sales has donated a free kitchen full of appliances to somebody.
Now what you had asked for originally were small appliances, or not small appliances, building materials.
Right.
You weren't asking for shoes and towels and clothes. You were asking for stuff,
right,
donations where people can restructure their lives. Is that right?
Right. There was some shoes on there, tennis shoes for youngsters, because they need them. But I believe that was the only item. There's been a lot of things. I believe there's a thing where Michelle in San Antonio is working to help get some seniors their medicine for free.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a lot of good people stepping up, and I just can't say enough about how much it means to the people down here, because they're not doing anything in New Orleans. They're not doing anything on the Mississippi coast.
No.
The people are being forgotten, and so this is a wonderful thing.
Well, that's great. Sarge, keep us updated, and people can go to unreportednews.net and get more information on this and on Joe from Atlanta. Sarge, I love you. Take care.
Thank you, pal.
Bye-bye. We'll talk again.
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Ten before the hour, Tom in Kansas City writes about our question, living under fascism. Mike, could I live under fascism? Not a chance. I've lived in the UK, Japan, and I've traveled to 8 countries. I've seen the true view of the United States that the rest of the world sees. I've been back in the States for 4 years now and still feel like a foreigner. Good thing my passport's in order, and most people abroad think I'm not American. Let's see. Cindy writes, can I live under fascism? I hate to pop your bubble, Mike, but we have been living under fascism for years. Nothing to look at. Move on. Yeah. This is from Butter7. Mike, we've never seen real communism in the world. Instead, we have brief revolutions by peasants, not organized workers, as would theoretically be required for communism. Those peasants were also starving, desperate, without hope. The communist systems set up were immediately attacked by the Western capitalist government, so the communist state set up the militaristic paranoid defense states, which, as we know, evolved into just plain dictatorships. But the theory, at least, was the resources should go for the people. In fascism, they also end up with militaristic dictatorships. The main difference is that there is no pretense that anything belongs to the people. Slangofoil. Gaelic. For goodbye. A couple more here. This is from George. Mike, I get the simple premise of the question, is living peacefully under fascism? The answer is resounding no. I'm contemplating where in the world I can go to get away from these sons of bitches, and the answers are not coming very quickly. I do not think I will survive very long fighting these freaks, but fight I will. George. This is the question about fascism. Gordon in Oklahoma City. Mike, since I'm gay and an atheist, it's doubtful I would be permitted to live under the dominionist style of fascism, which is taking over society and our government. Yeah, that's true. People who are targeted don't have a chance. Mike, all kidding aside, under a fascist state, would we still have our freedom fries? Jack. Probably. Okay. I know Francis in Montreal, Quebec says, I misunderstand communism. I'll have to get to that because that's a long one. This is from Bobby. Being 25 years old, and although I'm active politically, I think that if this country really was to continue down its route towards fascism, I don't see that there's much that we could do. I would fight, and I hope that we would all fight, but the biggest obstacle to freedom isn't an opposite view, it's complacency. Although there are so many of us that would fight it, the thought of security, even at the cost of freedom, would be tempting for so many people, many of whom I know. I hope it won't happen. I will fight it. I've read, I've studied, I've traveled and worked in third world nations, and I fear that we will continue down this route and would not want to, and I would not want to live through. I would fight it, and being an atheist, a fighter, and vocal, I'll be one of the first to go. As to everyone that would be complacent, unfortunately, how can you miss freedom if you've never tasted the alternative? That's from Bobby. Let's see, one more here. This is from Reg. Mike, there's a sad and alarming difference between what happened in Europe and what is happening in the U.S. today. During World War II, when fascism was on its way to engulfing all of Europe, resistant movements arose in every single occupied country and were very instrumental in the eventual downfall of the Axis powers. In the United States, there's no organized or effective resistance against the forces that have taken over our nation. On the contrary, the fascist ideologues have taken power with the approval and passive consent of the American people, the majority of whom begin and end their participation in democracy by pulling a lever in a voting booth once every few years. We are an uninformed and highly unconcerned population. Everything that is happening is being done in the open, while so few people really care. Case in point, a full day of in-depth reporting about the sad death of Anna Nicole Smith. This is what the people want. This is what they get. So many Americans welcome their own demise. Go figure. Yeah, I think there's another reason, too, because fascism is not identified as such in this country. There was a columnist years ago I used to love to read, Sidney J. Harris. He's been dead probably for 20 years. But when I was a kid growing up, he was a syndicated columnist. I guess he was a liberal. He was a very clear-thinking individual. When I first started reading him, I guess I was too young to tell the difference between liberal and conservative. But one of the columns that he wrote that stuck with me, and I may have it in a glassine envelope somewhere in the stack of stuff that I haul around, you know, my life in little envelopes. You know, I'm sure you do the same thing. But one of the columns he wrote had to do with the trickery in this country of fascism. And his point was, why doesn't the fascists in this country, whoever they are, just identify themselves as such? I think he's referring to Republicans. He said in most European countries, now remember, this was probably written 30 years ago, maybe 40, but he said in most European countries, fascists state their case. They don't call themselves Christian Democrats or liberal conservatives or Likud or whatever name they want to use. They come right out and call themselves, we are French fascists. We are Italian fascists. We are, well, you can't do it in Germany, I guess. But they state their case. And if that were the case in this country, if those people who truly believe in fascism, and they're all over the place, my God, of the 535 members of the House and the Senate, how many of those do you think would accept fascism? 75%? You know, Ben Franklin who said who famously said those who would give up freedom for security deserve neither, something to that effect. Don't send it to me, but that was the gist of it. Those who would give up freedom for security deserve or will get neither. He said that for a reason. You know, these are not new ideas. It might not have been called fascism back in the early 1700s, but or mid 1700s, but we get the point. I know you get the point. I can tell by your emails. We'll be back after the break. Back to your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy, and we just got another bulletin. Ted Haggard is still heterosexual. I wonder if he still will be when we come back from vacation, or, as our friends in the UK say, from holiday. We will be gone tomorrow and all next week. Tomorrow and next Friday, Jeff Farias of KPHX in Phoenix will be substitute hosting for us. Thank you, Jeff. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week, comedian Aaron Friedman will be guest hosting. And while I'm gone, please go to NovaMradio.com and sign up, become a founding member. We certainly need your support. And, I mean, you don't have to if you don't want to. The network is going to chunk right along. But for the things that that come with your membership, your $10 a month or $100 a year, it's well worth it. All right? NovaMradio.com. All right, very quickly, some emails here on the fascism question, and then back to your phone calls. This is from Steve in Raleigh. Mike, I'm one of those targeted minorities you spoke of, and I agree with your estimation of our near future, though there is no future for my partner and me within the coming fascist state, and I've recently paid $112 for a new passport. After stealing the past three elections, eliminating the middle class, flaunting the abuse of power, treason, mass murder, unilateral war, and the ruination of U.S. reputation around the world, do you honestly believe George Bush and his thugs will hand over power to whatever new administration is elected or selected? Are we to assume he won't attempt the next step and reach for a total coup? That's a very interesting question. And as we get closer and closer to November 08, I'll tell you, it scares the bejesus out of me. Fran in Baltimore writes, "Hi, Mike. I know I won't last long in a fascistic society since I'm a lesbian and a recovering Catholic. In fact, our society is of a Christian fascist one and becoming stronger. Ever since the past two presidential elections were stolen and this illegal war, I bought property in Canada. I am near retirement and the north wind is drawing me near. I try to do something to reverse this trend into the depths of fascism. I am on the street corners when there's a vigil for the war dead or at the marches for solidarity and imposing this illegal war. I'm so watchful with plans for a nuclear strike against Iran. Maybe it's time to go." This is from Eleanor. Fascism? I don't know. See, after the funeral is over, where do you go but home? And if you have no home left to go to, where then do you go? And I think this might be too deep and depressing for me, Eleanor. Jesus, that's poetic. Thanks, Eleanor. Thanks, everybody. Last one. This is from A.E. Mike, your problem with deciding if Nazi Germany or Stalin, the Soviet Union, is being used as a national model for the coming totalitarianism in America is that you are forgetting East Germany. That nation combined fascism and communism by suppressing freedom at all levels. People were willing to die to escape East Germany. Also, you left out the third choice of dying for democracy. Some of us who will be targeted minorities may have no option except the third one. A.E. Yeah, what did I just read the other day? More and more is coming out about the Stasi, the German, East German secret police. You talk about an organization born in the scrotum of Satan. The Stasi? Oh, my God. Okay, back to... excuse me, back to your phone calls. Gene is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. That fascism stuff is really scary that you're talking about.
Yeah, it is.
But they're always on the move, so I don't know if there's any place to go to escape them. But they like your empire.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah. You know, last night you were talking about... the disconnect between the truth and the way the media chooses to portray the events.
Yes.
And boy, I got some of that last night. I was watching Jim Lehrer, NewsHour.
Right.
And I thought, I'll find out about the Liddy, the Scooter Libby trial.
Uh-huh.
And it went on and on and on, and no one ever mentioned the word treason in the whole thing, or treasonous acts, or anything about the full impact and import of the events. It's just, it was frightening.
Maybe it's just for media types, it's just the wrong time to use a word that strong. That's a pretty strong word. We use it a lot on this program, and I think it is available for use, given what these thugs have done. But mainstream media has always been kind of hesitant. Even when it was honest, it was hesitant to use terms that it could be considered inflammatory. You know what I mean? I'm not excusing them. I just try to figure it out every day myself. Why don't they say what I say or some of my callers say?
But it was so polite. As if, you know, Scooter Lee, you know, didn't wash his hands after leaving the bathroom or something, you know.
Right, I know.
It's just something sort of creepy and impolite or something.
I know.
Rather than to have the, you know, the major import. I mean, people died because of him, it seems
sure.
likely. It's
sure.
creepy. But the reason I originally called was your the Nancy Pelosi's need for a plane.
Uh-huh.
These guys are just so bad. To me, it looks sexist. It's like they would only give a plane to a woman if she would take orders from them, like maybe Condi.
That's I'm sure that factors into the equation. These remember the Dominionist right Christians, they think women should shut up, sit down, don't say a word unless they're spoken to, kind of like the Taliban. As a matter of fact, very much like the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. And like, what's the difference between Pelosi and Hastert besides, you know, 82,000 blood sausages?
Or 180 pounds?
Yeah. I mean, Just gender. I mean, both Speaker of the House.
Right. Well, as it turns out, and we covered this at the beginning of the program, Pelosi never asked for anything. It was the Sergeant of Arms of the U.S. House of Representatives whose job it is to make sure that the Speaker and various constitutional officers in the United States the United States government, the ones that fall under the Sergeant at Arms purview, are protected. And it was he who was making the request. It wasn't Pelosi to begin with.
Yeah, it was just housekeeping.
It was right. And it was all based on this is accepted practice that came into effect after the Bush-engineered attack on this country on September 11th, 2001. So what's all the complaint about? I think you're probably right. I think there is a huge slice of sexism involved here. Nancy Pelosi has the absolute temerity to rise to Speaker of the House. Oh, my God, Jesus is going to flip over in wherever he is and get very pissed off about this, according to these guys.
And speaking of plane abuse, you know, Bush gets a free plane for his never-ending campaign fundraising.
Right,
sensibly,
exactly.
He only has to reimburse the taxpayers the cost of a regular plane ticket when he uses Air Force One for something like that. That is just crazy.
It's incredible. Kathy?
I just want to know how many times Tom DeLay had some lobbyist like Abramoff up there. You know, come on.
Well, if we're looking for a fairness, we're not going to find it. If we're looking for comparisons, they are abundant. But media in this country refuses to point out the idiocy, just like media in this country jumped on the Bill Clinton $200 haircut sitting on the tarmac of LA Express Airport when no such event ever occurred. This is the price that we pay for having a media composed of streetwalkers. Nothing against sex workers, of course, but having a media composed of streetwalkers who couldn't care less about whether or not the American public gets the truth. Hey, Gene, thanks for checking in, okay?
Mm-hmm, bye-bye.
All right, you have a nice evening.
You've got to believe, I said you've got to believe, I said you've got to believe, I said you've got to believe. So it all comes down to this.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
This is a good CD. You got to check this out. JohnNeems.com. His last name is N-I-E-M-S. In Your Dreams, John Neems. JohnNeems.com. Check it out. So that makes me feel like Don Imus when I talk about an artist playing on the program. Of course, he always talks about country artists. All right, just two more here, and then back to your phone calls. Regarding fascism, from Kate, there is no place to run. Speaking as a Native American and a witch, really, there is just no place to run. You can die running or you can die fighting, as my grandpa used to say. The Sioux have a saying, Yatahi. I think that means it's a good day to die. These people are capable of anything. There is no bottom. Oh, God. Yeah. From Alex in New York City, Mike, the next step in the move toward fascism is to freeze and cut off funding to expatriates, Social Security, and other government funding. This is the step when all well-abiding citizens and visitors, legal or illegal, need to step up and be counted. The doors of the United States, which have slowly begun to close, will then close even tighter. Going to the supermarket will be greeted by checkpoints. The reality of the Battle of Algiers will seem tame in comparison to what these fascists have planned for us. Protesting against them will only give them their excuse to impose martial law. We have to be concerned. Unfortunately, we can only hope something good happens and we can take back our country and regain the status that was once ours in the world. Well, the two key words in your email there, I think, Alex, is take back. And this is from Andre. Regarding fascism, he writes, he just came from a screening of Jacques Demy's Pied Piper. It's about feudalism, a depiction of the Dark Ages. Andre writes, the Black Plague follows the infestation of rats into a city. Milius, the Jewish doctor, believes the rats are carriers of the disease, that the illness comes from nature. The church elders and the bureaucrats label him a heretic. There is no proof that it exists in nature. What is happening is because of God's punishment. Can anyone say global warming? Artists and writers have been saying for a long time that we are headed for a new Dark Ages. Maybe I hoped against hope that wouldn't happen, even though my intellect said it's true. Yeah. But the idea, of course, is not to give up. There is a drama playing out on the stage of American politics. It is a melodrama. It is real in the sense that there is no fourth wall. But it is a play. There is no question that it is a theatrical display, unlike anything we've seen in this country in 100 years, maybe 150 years. And in my mind, we, as the playgoers, can do what we like. We can sit there and watch the play and see it reach its conclusion, or we can pelt the stage with cabbages and rotten tomatoes and eggs, or we can leap onto the stage, penetrate the fourth wall, and hang all the players. There's so many things we can do. We can demand that the author comes out and demand that the ending of the play be rewritten. Although the author probably won't like that, but tough. You think? Back to your phone call. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Well, I guess my black ass under that definition of fascism isn't going to make it now, is it?
No, you're going to be the first one up against the wall, dude.
I tell you the truth. You know, I think about that in the last few years, that I think Vancouver, B.C. is about 150 miles up the road for me.
Yeah, so I've been I have to tell you, it's regardless what some people might think, being white is not all it's cracked up to be all the time, but I'll tell you what, were I a black man in America, especially now, when you have the illusion that things are a certain way, and the reality is they are not. They don't. They just don't jive with the illusion. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. I honestly don't know what I would do.
Well, I will tell you that that is the difference that most black people, and I'm not talking about your Uncle Powell's and your Uncle Thomas's on the court,
right,
and stuff, but most black people have never had any kind of illusions about how things are in this country.
That's true.
Ever since we set foot over here in chains, none of us have had those kind of illusions. So.
Hey, hang on a second. Let me do this break. We'll come back and talk a little bit more. Stay where you are, Scott, and we'll pick you up on the other side of the break. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
I hear the voices, and I read the front page, but I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall. And that one looks Jewish, and that one's a cool.
Yeah, I'd have all of them shot. We're talking with Scott, who's called in from Federal Way, Washington. Where were we, Scott?
I was listening to that little Bush blurb. I was going to say, I wish he would decide to go to hell. But anyway, we were talking about the fascism thing, and I was just saying that I don't think most black people in this country have ever really been under any illusions unless, you know, like I said, that they're Uncle Thomas's and those types, but most of us have not. And, you know, and I don't want to piss off anybody by saying that, but, you know, it's, you know, some of these white people are now just starting to come out of the ether now that it's affecting them. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they're realizing that it's almost too late, but, you know.
Well, you know, Kathy, open up your mic. What did I remember right after the move, it became clear that what the Bush crime family was doing? Do you remember what I said?
Oh, you said it more than once. You said that white America is about to have a black experience and that every white person ought to get themselves some black friends real quick.
Well, you know what?
To help white folks understand what was going on, but you know
I think I heard, I went back and played one of your old shows, and you were saying something about, something to the effect that white people didn't understand why it was that black people didn't freak out when 9/11 had happened, and you had said something to the fact that if they truly wanted to know, that they should ask somebody black or one of their black friends or something to that, and
That was essentially, that was the program, because, I can remember how it was a horrible day for America. I'm not trying to make anything look racial. It was a horrible day for America. But the point I was trying to make was that black folk had been dealing with that horror for 350 years, and all of a sudden, white America, and the rest of America, but white America is confronted with it on a level that they had never experienced before. And people were going crazy in this country. You know, somebody said the other night, after 9/11, every place you looked, you saw flags and you saw these damn bumper stickers talk about God bless America, mm-hmm. and all this kind of pulling out these talismanic little symbols to keep the haints away. You know, get the flag up, get the decal up, get the ribbon up, get this, go to church. You know, got to keep these spooks and ghosts and haints from coming in and eating us alive. And the point I was trying to make, without trying to be slick or cool or ironic or being a smartass, the point I was trying to make was that white America, and I was talking to individuals, if you are freaking out right now and you don't know what to do, then talk to your black friend. You do have a black friend, don't you? Every white person should have a black person. Now, I know in the black community, you know, my friends used to tell me in the black community, Malloy, when we were growing up, we all knew we had to get a white boy. And I know what that's about. But all of a sudden, that flipped. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It flipped where people, where white folks, all of a sudden, because of the experience, not because it's cool you know, like I said, I wasn't trying to be slick with people, but I was trying to make a very clear point. That in this country, you know, you don't want to get a black friend, then go get a Jewish friend who's a survivor of the Holocaust. The problem with that is those would be very old people. You can get young black folk in this country who know exactly what how to handle major freak out. And that's what happened on September 11th.
No, and that's pretty much what happened. And what's his name? Michael. Oh, I forget. Michael Eric Dyson. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, but what he called it was, and no offense, but he called it what happened on that day that white people really got, what did he call it, the niggerization of white of America, happened that
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
But what I wanted to mention real quick, I'm going to drop the other thing because the caller before me had mentioned it, but I wanted to just mention real quick, I don't know if you talked about it at the beginning of your show because I missed the first part of it, but did you hear about Lieutenant Watada?
Yeah, a mistrial was declared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I, when that story first came up, we gave it some attention, but I've tended to stay away from it because I want to see how it plays out, and when it does play out, then we will try to I'll try to understand it, and I'll try to bring some understanding on this program. But I did see that in the paper, yeah.
But I will tell you that there are a lot of people, like, because he's up here in my neck of the woods, that do give him a lot of support. Now,
yeah.
You watch some of the, and I'm sorry to even say it, even some of the local media up here is
right.
Some of this right wing stuff like that. You know, they'll show a. Somebody, one of the, either a former soldier or somebody talking about they're ashamed of him and all of this kind of stuff, and he brings shame and stuff. And, you know, it's like you just want to just reach a
oh, sure.
TV set and smack him.
Oh, I know. He doesn't bring shame. He brings honor. He brings dignity. And, I have a hard time, as I'm sure most people do, have a hard time. We play that promo about Nova M a lot, about the sheep. You know,
mm-hmm.
For some reason,
yeah.
Sheep don't like to listen to Nova M radio. And I would rather be around one wolf than 1,000 sheep, because at least I know which way the wolf is going to go. And I can't handle sheep. I just can't.
And he's doing exactly what the Geneva Convention says.
Right. This is why we put people on trial in Germany and Tokyo after World War II. We put the suckers on trial and hanged them. We executed people for doing exactly what Lieutenant Watada says he's not going to do. So it's just,
I don't know what will happen, but I will tell you this. He has more courage to face an uncertain future than a lot of these sheeple that just, you know, just go along just to get along, not really realizing that they're going to the house of slaughter.
That's true. Scott, hang in there. Stay in touch, all right?
Thanks.
All right, man. We'll talk again. Take care. Rob is calling from New Hampshire, Freedom, New Hampshire. Is that right? Freedom, New Hampshire?
Yeah, that's correct.
There's a town called Freedom, New Hampshire. All right. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. The reason I'm calling, first, I got a statement, and then I got a question for you.
Okay.
I am up where John Sununu is senator.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's the one that had the two workers that got convicted for the phone jamming.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I basically call every day. I'm up in the woods. I basically separated myself from society after I got out of school, came up here to paint, cut myself off from popular media, and just tried to, you know, take some time up here. I'm actually the husband of the school teacher. They called you a few nights ago.
Oh, all right. Okay.
So I sit up here and paint. We now have a 3-year-old daughter. And just the filth that is seeping, the debris, I mean, you can't run far enough from it. I mean, even with no media, it still invades me on such a basis that I've been forced to become active.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically I call my first hour of every day. I call my congressmen, senators. I have a whole list I go down, issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And then I get a letter, and I get these often, and I break them down, and I call them back, and I argue the facts that they send me. And the one that I got today is talking about signing statements.
Uh-huh.
And it says, okay, they go into telling me what a signing statement is first, and then they say, however, these statements do not carry any legal authority. And then they go on to say, the last sentence of the paragraph, instead, these are to signal provisions in law that may encroach on the executive branch's constitutional powers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I call them back, and the last one I got was about the war in Iraq and the troops and the current debate, and I called them back, and I was like, this letter is utter war propaganda. It's like people just don't even realize.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the question I was going to get to is I'm calling them tomorrow, and essentially I had heard something in the past regarding after Nixon had resigned and the fact that Cheney was one of Ford's advisors.
That's true.
And had advised him to do a signing statement to stop the investigation of telecommunications.
I'm not familiar with that, but anything attributed to Cheney that is cowardly, illegal, anti-freedom, anti-American, I believe. Cheney is one of the worst political figures ever to be puked up on the American stage. He's just an absolute pig.
Yes.
Well,
so, but yeah, that was basically my question. I was wondering if you had any information on that.
No, I read something, I think, in one of the recent issues of The Nation that came out when Gerald Ford died, about how everybody was attributing to Ford the idea that he was a healer of the nation. What they left out in all that rhetoric was the fact that Alexander Haig apparently had a meeting with Ford prior to the pardoning of Nixon, and said that Nixon would resign if Ford would guarantee a pardon.
A pardon, right?
Right. And the writer of this, way back in the day, a Nation writer, the Nation got a lawsuit filed against him because it came out of a book. I forget who wrote it, but the bottom line was, it appeared that Gerald Ford and Alexander Haig were involved in obstruction of justice.
Right.
So, you know, all of these creepy bastards, and Alexander Haig is, you know, the only reason he's not running things the way Cheney is because he's making too much money being a thief and a global terrorist himself. So,
yeah.
Hey, listen, I got to go. Rob, stay in touch, okay?
Yep, have a great night.
All right, sir. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. About 9 before the hour. Thanks to Billy Foster, who engineered the program in Phoenix at KPHX. Billy also answered your calls. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Mark Marshall is our webmaster. Thanks to the moderators at MikeBoy.com on the message board to keep things flowing. I'll be off tomorrow night and all next week. So please join KPHX's Jeff Farias tomorrow night and next Friday. Monday through Thursday coming, comedian Aaron Friedman will be guest hosting. and it should be fun, so stick around. Catherine Bay is the executive producer of this program. You know, mentioning Imus tonight, on his program yesterday, Chris Matthews was on. Matthews is a hardcore Catholic choir boy type who's been buggered enough times that he thinks that fascism is a good idea. From the February 7th edition of MSNBC's Imus in the Morning, Chris Matthews said the following. He's a Giuliani, another hardcore Catholic, even though Giuliani is pro-choice and has a lot of gay friends. And as a matter of fact, that's where he went to hide when his marriage blew up. He went to hide with a couple of his gay friends. He's also pro-choice. He believes gay folks should make their own decisions. He's believes in gun control. So I don't know what Giuliani is. If he thinks he has an Ice Cube's chance in hell of getting the Republican nomination, he's out of his mind. Just like Mitt Romney, you guys ought to just hang it up and go home. It ain't going to happen. But Chris Matthews would probably like to do for Giuliani what Monica did for Clinton. That's the impression I get. Matthews was talking about him on Imus in the Morning the other day. He used the F word in a couple of things that Imus tried to bleep. And I think it was bleeped off his radio show, but I don't think MSNBC bleeped it. And I wasn't watching then either, damn it. Matthews said the following regarding Giuliani's term as mayor of New York. The subways didn't smell like pee anymore. Even the phone booths in New York have always smelled like pee. When there's not even a booth, it's just a phone, it smells like pee. And this guy cleaned it up, and he made you feel like you had a right to walk the street safely. I think he did a great job. I'm sorry, and I think the country wants a boss like that. You know, a little bit of fascism there. Just a little bit. Just a pinch of it. That's Chris Matthews. That's somebody who purports to be, I don't know what is he. He's not is he a newscaster? I don't know what the hell he is. I guess he's not. He's entitled to his opinion, but son of a bitch, here you have a guy who sits there on MSNBC. Now and says, "Well, what the country wants is, you know, a little bit of fascism, just a bit, just a pinch." Are you out of your mind, you blonde-haired freak? A pinch of fascism? Well, that's the, you know, when you are brought up Catholic, the way some of these white boys on cable television, and they're all over the place. You know, folks that think they're this huge Israel lobby has influence. I got news for you. All these white male, formerly buggered Catholic boys, choir boys, who are now commanding in positions of media around this country, who promote this kind of fascist horse crap because that's what they were taught. That's what they're taught their families, their churches, their social groups. Authoritarianism, totalitarianism, fascism, a pinch of fascism. That's wonderful.
Just a smidgen, a sprinkling. Well, it makes you wonder which part. Just the pee in the toilet, you know, the pee in the phone booth part. I mean, do we have to go to fascism to stop people from peeing in phone booths?
Apparently, according to now, Imus didn't respond. Imus responds by saying, "Well, he's not going to get the nomination because, you know, the right wing nuts, you know." But there's Chris Matthews, Tweety Bird. I don't know. I wonder about so many of these people. You know, I don't know these people. I have no idea. You know, Mary Madeline and Chris Matthews and Bill O'Reilly and Al Franken and people who I guess were kind of in the same business. I don't know him from Adam's house cat. I see him on television. I think, well, they must be important. Christ, they have radio and TV jobs. And then I think, wait a second, you got a radio job. Yeah, but not like that. Making those kinds of statements that America wants a pinch of fascism, just a little bit, he says. And there's no irony here. There's no dark humor here. This choir boy means it. And that's another reason I have such problems with... with American religion. And thanks to Spitfire for sending that to me. It's from MediaMatters.org. Go check it out yourself. All right. But is it time to go? Oh, damn. I want to stay for another couple hours. I am so out of here. We are gone tomorrow and next week. Y'all have a good time, all right? We're going to go visit family and hang out for a week and come back all refreshed. If something happens and I get dead in this week, don't ever believe it was suicide, okay? What? Kathy was ready to say something? No, never mind.
You look nothing like Anna Nicole.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, I'll see you. I'll see you eventually. Take care. All right, keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.